Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke. This is the July 15th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, welcome aboard, everyone, for another great hour of discussion about our nation's space program, and we do have a lot of ground to cover today. Ahead during this hour, we'll touch on the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy Space Center, the launch of a new crew to the International Space Station last night on this, the 37th anniversary of the Apollo-Soyuz test project, or as they like to say in Russia, the Soyuz-Apollo test project. Plus, this week, 43 years ago, Apollo 11 launched from KSC on the first lunar landing mission. And as much as there is to talk about the past, we have a lot to talk about the future of space exploration from here on the Space Coast and how folks at the Kennedy Space Center are preparing for those exciting things to come. We'll do all of that with the help of our very special guest today, the director of the Kennedy Space Center, Bob Cabana, who will join us in just a moment. Plus, we'll be happy to take your questions and comments as well about anything having to do with our space program. Feel free to give us a call at 768-1240. The area code is 321 if you need it. And if you're more comfortable sending us an email, well, then the address is spacetalking@aol.com. Well, let's get right into today's program, in which we will continue to honor and recognize the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy Space Center. And we'll do that by reminding everyone about what a special place this is for our space program and for our nation. And I want to share with you, well, really, again, how important it has been to me for as long as I can remember. You know, someday I'm going to write a book and detail all these stories, which I know echo the experiences of a lot of folks who grew up with the space program, just as I did in Minnesota, watching Star Trek reruns on one channel and Apollo launches and moonwalks on another. So many of my memories as a child seem to point me to this place. I remember watching launch coverage on NBC with Frank McGee, brought to you by Gulf Oil, which we didn't have in Minnesota, but they did have in Florida. So when we drove down here for family vacations, it was actually exciting to get gas at Gulf Station. You know, I remember visiting here in 1972 and seeing Apollo 16 on Pad 39A and taking my savings for a whole year as a 10-year-old, something like $80, and spending it all at the souvenir shop at the visitor complex, which back then was just a pair of buildings connected together with a covered walkway for the bus tours. I remember after visiting KSC one year, learning to swim at the pool at what is used to be the Quality Inn, but is now an Econo Lodge on US 1 next to the B-line. Between those visits and reading about the Cape in Life magazine or in books by Martin Caden or even listening to Jay Barbary on the radio, watching I Dream of Jeannie or even Gilligan's Island, if you can believe it, because it had more than its fair share of space-related episodes. All of that and so much more inspired me and motivated me not to go to Houston or Huntsville or even Pasadena, but to move to Florida, where I eventually graduated from Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach, started a career working in the shadow of America's spaceport, and through the years getting to know some of the most incredible people in the world who truly do turn dreams into reality. You know, at the top of this radio program, when I say the Space Coast is home to America's most skilled aerospace workforce, I can tell you in my heart that this is in no way hype. It is a true fact. And I am especially honored to be joined today in the studio by the person who leads that remarkable team at KSC. Bob Cabana is a veteran of four space shuttle missions. A retired Marine colonel is the 10th director of the Kennedy Space Center in its 50-year history, having taken the reins in 2008 from Bill Parsons. And most importantly to me, he is a fellow Minnesotan. So it's possible that at some point today, instead of space flight, we'll start reminiscing and you know, talking about a boat going out on the lake to go some fishing and drink some coffee and maybe complain about the Vikings, don't you know? Well, anyway, Bob Cabana, welcome back to the program.
Jim, it's a real pleasure to be here with you today and share some stories and talk about the future of human space exploration. And I couldn't agree with you more. KSC has the most talented workforce anywhere. They are phenomenal.
Oh, it's absolutely true. You know, this is our third week and kind of wrapping up a trilogy of sorts of celebrating the 50th anniversary of KSC. The first week we had on July 1st, we had George English and Bob Seek and Roy Tharp on, told us a lot of stories. We had former astronaut Tom Jones on with us last week, shared some great memories about Kennedy Space there. And so kind of as a segue into you, Bob, let's talk about it. I'm very curious about what your earliest memory is of the Kennedy Space Center, maybe even before you came here, what your earliest memory of learning about this place is. And tell us about your first visit here. What was that like?
Well, obviously, very first was just watching, you know, when I was in school, the launches for the Mercury, the Gemini, and eventually Apollo programs. And by the time Apollo came around, I was off at the Naval Academy in Annapolis. And in 1970, April of 1970, the Physics Honor Society took a field trip down here to Kennedy.
Oh, really? Okay.
And we came to see Apollo 13 launch.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know, Jim Lovell, Naval Academy graduate. And before the launch, we got tours of the Kennedy Space Center. And I remember being in the vehicle assembly building in the transfer aisle with my black and white camera taking pictures of these Saturn V rockets stacked up to go to the moon.
Oh, my gosh.
And I never had anybody take a picture of me in the VAB. And I'd love to have a picture of that now. But that was really special. And then seeing the launch, what a phenomenal place. What vision the Apollo team had when they built Launch Complex 39.
You know, Kurt Debus, our first center director, was very instrumental in that design. We've talked about that, about the whole idea of assembling something in a vehicle assembly building. And how do you move that thing out to the pad? You know, do you use a crawler like we eventually use? Do you use rail? At one point, they talked about a barge, as I'm sure you're aware, flooding the VAB with water to lift it up on its barge and moving it on a giant mold. It's incredible stuff. Tell me about what it's like to see a Saturn V launch. Where were you? How far away were you?
You know, this is really sad because I took pictures. And this
is whenever
anybody sees a rocket launch today, I tell them, don't take pictures of it. You can get the best pictures from anybody else. But nobody gave me that warning.
Right.
So all I remember is, you know, seeing this tiny little rocket in the viewfinder, you know, lifting off from the pad and going off into space and then feeling it. And the one thing I do remember, and, I wish my memory was better, but if I were to compare, and I don't think it was strictly because of the distance, because I'm sure we were, you know, not as far away in the causeway, in that vicinity. But I think the shuttle gets up and goes out of town a lot faster than the Saturn V did.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty amazing.
So that sound moves very quickly away from you.
Yep.
You know, shuttle compared to Saturn, where it rolls. We got about a minute and a half left before we take our first break. We have so much to cover with you, Bob. We could easily do 2 or 3 hours today. The quick question I want to ask you before this break is once you were here, you've had all your experiences as an astronaut. You're here as center director in 2008. All these things you've had all these experiences out here, but now as center director, what have you learned in the last 3 or 4 years about this space center that we didn't know before? And I don't mean in terms of the people and the operations, but is there some secret place you got to go? Is there something that you did? Is there some piece of trivia you didn't know before?
One thing I had never done until I became the Kennedy Center director was get in the rubber room in the pad.
I knew it. Oh, I could have put money on that. Yeah.
Yep, you don't want to bet.
I don't want to bet. No, you got to go. Which one? Pad A?
It was Pad B.
Pad B. So you went down in the rubber room.
Yep.
Saturn V emergency bunker, if you will,
which
the crew would slide down and hide into in case Saturn V was about to blow up over them. Wow, that's a great experience. Very 60s. Well, anyway, okay, we got to take a quick break here. You can tell we got a lot to talk about, a lot of great stories as we continue our conversation with KSC Director Bob Cabana. Don't forget the phone line's open for your questions or comments about our space program. Give us a call, 321-768-1240, or send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Do stay tuned. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in the program today. You can also send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, at 10:40 p.m., at least our time last night, a Russian Soyuz rocket lifted off from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, carrying three new crew members into space destined for a docking with the International Space Station. The Russian, Japanese, and American crew included NASA astronaut Sunny Williams, who is making her second trip to the space station. She will eventually command Expedition 33 in September. And boy, there's a lot to talk about just regarding this flight, including the fact that it was launched on the 37th anniversary to the day that the Apollo-Soyuz test project begun. With me in the studio today, director of the Kennedy Space Center, Bob Cabana. And Bob, as I said, there's a number of topics to talk about this launch. And the thing that I'm most interested in is that with the end of the space shuttle program not flying to the space station, and you having these flights from Baikonur, we've seen the Dragon flight from here, we've got Japanese, we've got the Ariane going up, and all the other folks, to what extent is KSC still supporting International Space Station operations, either from logistics or from engineering or however? How are we
sure.
involved?
Actually, we have a great involvement. First off, all the spares for the space station are stored here at the Kennedy Space
really?
Center.
Okay.
And, you know, if they need something, we get it, we check it out, we package it, and get it to whatever cargo vehicle is going to ship it up to the space station.
Okay.
So that is one role. The other role is science on the space station. I mean, we're working with CASES to help make them successful, the
uh-huh.
Center for the Advancement of Science in Space
okay.
here at the Space Life Sciences Lab. But we're also developing ways to take that science into space, how to package life science experiments,
uh-huh.
plant growth experiments. So we have engineers working on science for the space station as well as the logistics for the space station.
So is all that happening in Space Life Sciences Lab? Or, I mean,
No. It's
in the Space Station Processing Facility?
Absolutely. It's over in the Space Station Processing Facility. The spares are in a warehouse at KSC.
Okay.
We have laboratories that support this Space Station Processing Facility within that building. So yeah, it's spread out at KSC.
And ignoring for the parochial local Florida concerns, when Orbital Sciences was talking about launching Antares in Wallops, which, again, we'll put aside the local issue there, I wonder just how the logistics supply chain would work. Wouldn't it be easier to launch from the Cape? But I guess if you're supplying parts to Baikonur or to Japan or to wherever.
You got it. We ship them, for ATV, HTV, Progress Vehicle.
Right.
So I guess we can ship them to Wallops, too.
And this is where point-to-point suborbital spaceflight needs to kick in, when you absolutely have to get it there in an hour, right? So another angle to this whole launch last night is, again, to emphasize the fact that human spaceflight is by no means done.
Oh, absolutely not. We've got six people, or we'll have six again on the space station here shortly. Great crew up there. Of course, the American up there right now is Joe Acaba,
right.
Former science teacher
here in Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Right
also
across the street.
Former Marine, great guy, just awesome. Sonny, I got to get a plug in for my
sure.
alma mater, Naval Academy graduate, naval officer. Yuri Malenchenko is a great guy she's going up with, and Aki. Aki was a
Japanese astronaut.
Yeah, when I was the chief of the astronaut office, he was just assigned to help support operations there at JSC for NASDA, and which became JAXA, and
sure.
now he's an astronaut flying in space.
And I think it's really neat that Sunny gets to, I've been very impressed with her and all the coverage that's been done on NASA TV leading up to this mission. She's been very open, very a great communicator.
Oh, absolutely.
Great appearance on the Stephen Colbert show when they announced the treadmill thing. And then she gets to be the expedition commander. But also, the little trivia point of the day is that she's got 195 days is the longest single duration spaceflight for a woman in U.S. history, which I think is great. It's a nice little thing to asterisk her name with. So
absolutely, Sunny's a great person.
So your human spaceflight's still going. KSC's still active in supporting all this. Now let's talk about the angle of the fact that coincidentally, and again, as Sunny said in her press conference, she believes fate, you know, intervened here because they were supposed to launch a few weeks ago and they got delayed. Now they launch on the day that Apollo Soyuz launches back in 1975, and they're going to dock on the day that the Soviet and the American spaceships came together in orbit. And there's a lot of significance there, and there's a legacy there. There's meaning there, and I just wondered what your thoughts are on that.
Let's see, a couple things. First off, so I don't forget, you know, the space station. The space station is up there till 2020 right now.
Right.
We're going to extend it beyond that. It'll probably go to 2028. It's not going to come down anytime soon. You know, and we need a place for these commercial vehicles to go to, but it's got a lot of life left in it. When you look back on, you know, Russian-American partnership, I mean, even President Kennedy was trying to get the Russians involved with us to go to the moon.
True.
Little-known story.
Right.
We have been working with them. Apollo Soyuz, Shuttle Mir, and International Space Station. We could not have done the International Space Station program with the Russians had we not worked with them through Shuttle Mir and developed the relationships and procedures and stuff. Interesting point. The docking system that was used on the shuttle was essentially the same docking system that was used for Apollo Soyuz test project, slightly modified and designed for the shuttle and the International Space Station is still being used, the APAS system.
I think we learned a lot from ASTP, and I think one of the things that maybe we learned as well is just how to get along with different spacecraft with different atmospheres.
Yeah.
You know, Apollo went up as pure oxygen. Soyuz went up with air, essentially oxygen and nitrogen. I think we probably learned from that experience that you don't want spacecraft with different things. You don't have to do all this time between spacecraft, and so you can dock and immediately open the hatch and go one to one. I think all that's great stuff. On the subject of anniversaries, we don't want to forget the fact that again we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of KSC, 50 years of the Space Center being here on the Space Coast. This is the 43rd anniversary week of Apollo 11. Tomorrow, July 16th, the anniversary of the launch. We're all going to listen to Jack King's commentary again. I feel like I got to send him a note and tell him, hey. July 20th, the moon landing, of course. Historic, huge moment. Would you be willing to make a list, Bob, of the most historic moments out at the Kennedy Space Center? And would you put Apollo 11 at the top?
It has to rank. The day that we left planet Earth to put people on the moon. Yeah. That is definitely an historic event, historic date. I will never forget watching those guys step down on the lunar surface in the summer of 69. It boggled my mind. You know, I mean, it just that we could do that. And when you consider where we were, you know, Alan Shepard, May of 61 to July of 69, a little over 8 years, we went from a parabolic flight in a single-person spacecraft to walking on the moon. That is dedication. That is having a vision and a goal and achieving it.
And you know, it does beg the question, and, you know, we're all big supporters of what's going on. You know, why can't we do that again?
Well, and we could. It's nothing more than national will and funding. The Apollo space program had 4.5% of the federal budget. We're under a half of 1% right now. They had 10 times the money we have, and that's why it's taking us the time it is to establish, you know, our exploration program and get where we need to go. And I know we're going to talk more about the future, but, you know, that's a significant difference. If we had $180 billion instead of $18 billion, think what we could do. But we can't afford that right now with the deficit and the way things are. So we have to be very frugal with the money we have and spend it appropriately.
Oh, I want to touch another piece on the importance of the Kennedy Space Center to our community. Of course, it is a major economic driver. Even today, even though we've lost a lot of folks with shuttle, it's still an important part of what we do here and will be, I think, for a long time to come. Talk about the kind of money that goes into this community. I know the 2013 bonds, what, more than $2 billion?
Absolutely. Over $2 billion came to KSC that goes out and buys hardware, pays salaries. It's tremendous. And I know we've come down. I mean, if you look at the peak of Apollo, we had 25,000 contractors and civil servants here. Even at the peak of shuttle was like 18,000, averaged about 15,000 in the end. We're down now. And it's been a tough transition, but we have a path forward. We've laid out a path. We got a great course. We got a great future, and we're making it happen. And, you know, commercial space, an exploration program coming together, mutually compatible, supporting one another. And I believe we'll have a more stable base here at KSC, and we're going to get back to probably around 10,000 contractors and civil servants working here.
We'll talk about the specific areas you're working on in a moment. I want to press you, though, on a little bit. Give me your top five most historic moments at the Kennedy Space Center. Can you bang them off?
Well, let's see. Obviously, the Apollo launch to the moon, Apollo 11.
Putting you on the spot.
I mean,
I
the
know.
First shuttle so launch.
First
to
shuttle
me,
launch, yep.
To me, that was the test flight to top all test flights.
Oh,
to fly
crazy,
that vehicle
yeah.
with Crip and John on board on the very first flight and yeah. the success of that, that was phenomenal. October of 1990 sticks out for me. That's when I launched on my first flight. May not be historic for KSC, but it was pretty historic for me.
Sure good for you and your family. Oh, that's great. That's great.
You know, and I have to speak of tragedy because we always come yeah. back from it. But, you know, you look at the Apollo fire on Launch Complex 37, the Challenger, and Columbia. Those were tragic times, but it's not what goes wrong. It's how you come back from that.
Oh,
and we came back strong in every case.
Absolutely, we did. And you're right. History is history, whether it's good or bad. And it all happens right here in our space coast, in our backyard. Bob, stand by. Everyone else, stand by. We're going to pause now for our usual five-minute built-in hold at the bottom of the hour. Take a break. Get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. Then we'll come back with more with Bob Cabana from KSC. Meanwhile, 321-768-1240, the number to call to participate. Let's be back in just a moment. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Space Talk on WMMB.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to Space Talk. Second half of our program. The phone number is 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, 3 years ago, believe it or not, Kennedy Space Center Director Bob Cabana appeared on what was only the second edition of Space Talk. That day we were getting ready to launch a Delta IV with a NOAA weather satellite. We were also just days away from launching the Space Shuttle Endeavour. Bob is back today for another visit. And I guess we got to say again, what a busy 3 years it's been for you out at the Space Center.
It's been phenomenal. And the last year, you know, a year ago this month, we landed Atlantis,
yeah.
the last space shuttle to ever fly in space. And I look at the progress we have made toward the future, establishing the Ground Development Systems Operation program here at KSC to transform the launch complex to support not only the Space Launch System but also commercial operations from the Cape, standing up the Commercial Crew Program, which is now getting ready to move into its third phase of Space Act agreements with its initial capability agreement to get contracts through agreements through critical design review on a human spacecraft. You know, the Launch Services Program continues to excel in all they do, providing the expendable vehicles for our science missions. Just a great change, great transformation, and huge progress when you look at Launch Complex 39. And not only that, but we're involved in a lot of neat science and engineering projects, too, research.
Lots of questions to ask you about each of them. The one thing I do want to just kind of follow up on and conclude, but in terms of the last 3 years, we did have the end of the shuttle. It was very difficult. I know you personally were very, I mean, we all suffered and
it
felt
was emotional.
For it. It was very emotional. Are we past the grief? The grief cycle ends with acceptance, and then you move on. Are we there yet?
I definitely think we've accepted it. The team at KSC has accepted it. I can see it in the excitement. If you go over to the ONC High Bay, you see the team working on flight hardware. The first Orion spacecraft is at KSC. The first time we are building a human spacecraft at the Kennedy Space
Amazing.
Center.
Amazing, yeah.
And it's going to fly in 2014 on a Delta IV rocket on a test flight. Those folks are pumped over there. I think you go around and you talk to everybody, and we needed a break between programs to get all the work done that we needed to do. But I think folks are seeing that we do have a very positive future. We have to make it happen. What I tell the folks at KSC all the time is, you might not like where we are. You might not like how we got here. But it doesn't matter. That's history. We can't do anything about it. What we can do is define our future and define that path to make it happen.
I think the commercial crew thing, I want to spend a little time on that, Bob, because that is such a huge deal, and I have difficulty explaining to the person who doesn't understand the NASA organizational structure or even NASA center politics or program budgets and all of these things. To have a commercial crew office, a program office here at Kennedy Space Center is such a big deal for the Space Center, and there's so much great stuff going. The idea that Orion is being built here, not built somewhere else and then brought here and checked out for launch, which has been the historical mode of operation, but to actually have it assembled and built here at KSC makes so much sense. Should have been done years ago. So many plans with so many folks out there. The one part I want to ask you about, though, is there are lots of plans. You've got, what, five different folks talking about launching humans into space from the different commercial folks. They've all made plans. They've all made announcements that involve KSC in one way or the other. I guess one of the things that I'm concerned about, and I hear from folks out in the public, is that, of course, not all of them will win contracts. They'll not all get to come here. You know, will there be enough work is the question for the folks that want to be out here when you do down select to the one or two folks that you're going to have do this work.
Well, we're never going to have the workforce that we had during the shuttle program. Will there be more work? Absolutely. But not that many more jobs. And the vehicles are different. They do not require the intensive touch labor that the shuttle required. They're simpler, more reliable, more robust in how they go to and from planet Earth. So, you know, yes and no. I believe there's going to be – it's stability. Okay,
right.
It's getting them here. And not everybody's going to win a contract.
Right.
You're absolutely right. And so are the others going to be far enough along that they will still continue their capability to develop a spacecraft for humans to fly in space? And we'll have to see. This next phase, we're going to neck down from the – right now we have seven folks under Space Act agreements, four of them funded, three of them unfunded.
Okay.
We're probably going to go down, and they're saying, you know, two to two and a half are going to get funded in this next round. So we'll see how it plays out.
And there may be a market that grows out of this. These other folks will get a chance to fly.
You know, I look at it, I kind of compare it to aviation.
Yeah.
If you look at after World War One, we had all these – aviation had taken off, and we had all these excess planes. You could go, you know, at the county fair, jump in a Jenny and go up 2,000 feet and see the farm, and pay for your ride to fly in an airplane. Well, that's kind of like these suborbital flights, like X-Corps and Virgin Galactic and stuff. You pay your money, and you get to go up above 50 miles and float for a few minutes and come back to Earth. That's kind of like that. At first, aviation – commercial aviation, it was only the very rich and the elite that got to fly.
Sure.
But eventually, you know, all of us can fly on an airliner now and be able to afford it. And I think we're still at that very early stage from a commercial human spaceflight capability, but it's going to evolve.
Talk some more quickly about the Ground Systems Development and Operations Program, the GSDO. It's not very sexy in terms of the rockets, but without this program, none of this other stuff's going to work.
Absolutely. Launch Complex 39, again, I talk about the vision the Apollo folks had. We used it for Apollo. We used it through the shuttle program, and now we're transforming it again. We're working on transporter number two, upgrading its generators, its engines, its lift capability, redoing all the – you know, I mean, it'll be refurbished to last for the future when we get done. Launch Pad B, 39B. All the shuttle infrastructure's gone. It's got a state-of-the-art lightning protection system. It's got refurbished propellant distribution system. It's got digital controls. It's, you know, it will be able to support. We've gone to a clean pad concept where multiple mobile launchers adapted for a specific rocket have a common interface at the pad. Because if we're not only launching, you know, once or every couple of years, there's other times that we can utilize that resource.
The towers out there were neat and fun and historic and were part of shuttle and iconic in that way. But Pad B looks like it did back when it was first built for Apollo.
Absolutely.
You know. But what about Pad A now? The towers are still out there. What are you doing with Pad A?
Well, Pad A, we're just kind of letting it sit because we don't have a use for it for our new program. But I'm negotiating with some folks who would like to use it.
Yeah.
And they may or may not make modifications to it to be able to launch their spacecraft on it. So we'll see. We're trying to work on negotiations out there. You know, the OPFs, the Orbital Processing Facilities, we're trying to find customers to utilize them. We have an agreement with Space Florida to bring Boeing into OPF Bay 3 for their commercial venture, the CST-100 spacecraft. We'll see how that all works out. And we're working on bringing another customer into OPF Phase 1 and 2. So that's going to bring work here, bring stability here.
I know I asked you about this one time, and I'm teasing about it again. When are you going to redo the signs out of the SLF and go from shuttle landing facility to spaceport landing facility?
I think it's always going to be the shuttle landing facility. Damn. I don't know. We'll see. But we're trying to bring other customers, other work into that. You know, that's a horizontal launch capability here at the Cape.
Right.
You know, Paul Allen wants to bring his Strato launch vehicle here.
Incredible vehicle.
And launch from the Cape. So we're negotiating on that. It's going to be an interesting future. I really believe we can become that spaceport of the 21st century that's supporting multiple operations.
Now, the SLS, the Space Launch System, nothing would make me happier than to see that monster lift off from the Kennedy Space Center. But there is, in the space community, a lot of folks that kind of wonder, why do we need to spend the money on it? What is its purpose in terms of, you know, is it better? Is there a better, more efficient, less costly way to do the same kind of thing, for example, by launching, instead of one big rocket, multiple smaller rockets, and then assembling your spaceship in Earth orbit and sending it on its way?
We have done the studies. We have studied this over and over.
Yeah.
And the most efficient, least risky, cost-effective way, if we want to really explore beyond our home planet, to go back to the moon, to asteroids, to Mars, you name it, is to have an evolvable heavy lift vehicle. And that's the Space Launch System. And it starts out, you know, in that 70 to 90 metric ton range, and it gets up to 130 metric tons. And the multi-purpose crew vehicle, Orion, is the right crew vehicle to have on it. So we are headed down the right path. It is a capability-driven architecture that is sustainable and evolvable to the future.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it worked for Saturn. I mean, Saturn, in a sense, evolved over the course of its design. When we had the mission, we knew exactly how to configure it and flew it. If we had had a different mission or additional missions after the moon, we would have adapted. I remember they're talking about putting solid rocket boosters on the Saturn V as the shuttle was coming along. You know, so SLS makes sense in a lot of ways. You know, could it be less costly? I wish we could afford more. I'm still a little concerned about, you know, the money being spent on the rocket, and then is there going to be enough willingness from Congress to give us the money to go do the missions afterwards? But I don't think that gets in the way of getting prepared for the rocket itself.
No, absolutely. You need the rocket regardless. So eventually we have to add to it in order to send it on its mission, and we're working on that.
I'll go back to the Orion vehicle again. Talk about what's happening to that. This is the first ship that came in, but about 2 weeks ago. It's in the operations and checkout building, the ONC building. Folks are doing what to it between now and when it's going to fly?
They're outfitting it. It came as an aluminum pressure shell, if you will, from the Michoud Assembly Facility over in Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And our team is going to finish building it, install all the systems, put the thermal protection system on it, complete the vehicle, and launch it on its test flight. When it comes back, it's then going to be used for an abort test down the road.
So there's a little reusability in that.
Absolutely.
Sense.
We're sending out greater than 3,000 miles for lunar reentry speeds.
It's going to be an incredible mission. Hey, everyone, stand by. We are going to take our, believe it or not, final break of the day. When we come back, we'll wrap up our discussions for the week, plus take a look at the local launch forecast. I'm Jim Benke. You are listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk with a reminder that you can stay in touch with us throughout the week. If you're on Facebook, search for Space Talk. If you're on Twitter, look for Space Talking. And for one-stop shopping, visit www.wmmbam.com, keywords Space Talk. Now let's take a moment for our weekly look at the local launch forecast. Well, it's the same story last week as it is this week. Our next space shot from the Cape remains targeted for August 23rd, when an Atlas V is to carry a NASA science mission into Earth orbit. A pair of spacecraft will be sent into a very high egg-shaped elliptical orbit over our planet to study Earth's radiation belts and how the sun affects them and ultimately us. Appropriately enough, the effort called the Radiation Belt Storm Probes mission. Launch time is 4:08 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It'll be a great morning dark shot. It should be really spectacular, as they always are. For more information about this and all the various launches scheduled around the world, jump onto the web again to WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, and look for the link to our launch forecast webpage. Well, we're talking today with the Kennedy Space Center Director Bob Cabana. This is the 50th anniversary year of our Space Center, America's Rocket Ranch. And although we're not launching stuff, Bob, from KSC proper, KSC and NASA and your launch services program, very busy at Cape Canaveral. We just mentioned the Atlas V launch. A lot of things going on in that world, sending stuff into space. Still, talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. The team just got back from Kwajalein, where they launched New Star with a Pegasus spacecraft. New Star had its first light the other day, and it's working extremely well. You know, a lot of KSC engineering helped support that launch, doing analysis on the frangible joint for the shroud separation, working on the software VNV for the new GNC computer that was on board. Great team effort with Orbital to ensure a successful launch. You know, that's really important. It's part of KSC. They've been part of the Kennedy Space Center since 98 when the program came down here and was established. And a great capability being able to procure those science missions. And it's also a model for, I think, how we're going to move forward with the commercial crew program.
Yeah.
And what level of involvement do we have? How do we ensure that we get what we need without having it overly oppressive?
You know, we talk about commercial space being so new. We've been doing commercial space for a long time with commercial rockets, commercial satellites.
Absolutely. The commercial crew program, I mean, it's a government procurement by a different name. And we're going about it a little bit differently. But in the end, we will have a contract that ensures that we have a safe, reliable spacecraft to take our crews to the International Space Station.
We had some New Star guys, Garrett, and then George Diller came in and talked. And I'll never forget, told George at that program, I'll never forget the day that NASA did its first commercial launch from the Cape. And he and I had a long conversation in his office about the difference between oversight and insight in terms of how the government would work with these launches. And it really makes a lot of sense to do it the way we're doing it now. And, you know, we could do another whole hour on cost plus versus whatever.
We, NASA, have been going back and forth to low Earth orbit for 50 years. We know how to do that.
Yeah.
And our commercial companies know how to do that. We can trust them, provided we give them the right requirements to build the spacecraft. And then we, NASA, can focus on the really hard stuff, exploring beyond our home planet, you know, investing in the SLS and Orion so that we can actually explore beyond planet Earth again.
We, Bob, we have a quick question from Don in Rockledge with a question about Orion. Don, real quick.
Yes. I think people need to get excited again about the space effort. And I was just wondering how many launches it would take to establish a base on the moon and when that's actually projected to start happening.
Don, thanks very much for the phone call. It's a great question because it's all about the future.
Absolutely. First off, the Space Launch System as it stands right now, we're flying the first test flight of Orion in 2014 on a Delta IV to test its thermal protection system. Right now, we're launching the first big rocket with that spacecraft on board in 2017, and currently the first flight with a crew is not scheduled till 2021, and that'll be a test flight that we still have to define exactly what we're going to be doing. We're looking at ways that we can do more, and we'll have to see how it plays out as the budget develops and we go into the future. Our goal right now, based on direction from the administration and the president, is to be able to fly to an asteroid in 2025. Obviously, you know, this rocket is evolvable. It will be capable of going to the moon, Mars, and you name it. So what it would take to establish a lunar base, you know, I can't give you an answer on that, Don, but we have folks that have studied what it takes to go back to the moon to really establish a presence on the moon, not just go for a couple, 3 days like we did during Apollo. The real thing here is developing that capability so that we can go to an asteroid, we can go to the moon, and eventually the ultimate goal is to get to the red planet and put humans' boots on Mars.
And I wouldn't be surprised, Bob, if commercial interests don't get back to the moon before we do or at the same time we do. And once they see a way to get up there and take advantage of the resources on the moon, you know, then it's just a matter of how many flights can these folks get up there. And I think the key thing for establishing a base on the moon is that every time you visit, you need to bring up something new, a new capability, new infrastructure, new equipment, another tank, something so that you're not going up there and then coming back and not leaving anything behind. You got to slowly build up, just like you would build any neighborhood one house at a time. You know, I think that might happen. And I think we're still talking 20, 30 years away at least. So
absolutely. And I think you're going to see a cooperative government and commercial effort in this. You know, it's not going to be solely the government. And I think when we finally explore beyond planet Earth again, you'll see it as an international cooperative effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob, we're actually starting to run out of time, so we got to ask one Minnesota question.
Okay, I got a question for you.
Oh, you got a question for me.
Absolutely, because I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours. What is the very first Vikings game that you can remember going to?
I do not remember the very specific Viking game. I know that my dad took me a few times, and it was Met Stadium, which was right across the Minnesota River from our neighborhood where we grew up. And all I remember was sitting in a snowmobile suit on 3 inches of ice, outdoors, very cold, drinking as much hot chocolate as I could, and not understanding why all the men around me were drinking ice-cold beer.
I understand. Well, it was December of 1969.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, I was a midshipman at home on Christmas vacation, and a friend of mine from another friend got tickets. We were on the 40-yard line about, I don't know, 30 rows back at Met Stadium, and I saw the Vikings beat the Rams in the playoff.
Oh.
And Joe Capp was the quarterback, and it was awesome.
Oh, it must have been great. What great memories. Great memory. And somehow we all wound up together in Florida at the Kennedy Space Center, something that I absolutely treasure.
Can I get you a piece of pie with that coffee, eh? Maybe a cookie.
Oh, yeah, you betcha. Thanks a bunch there, don't you know? Sure. Yeah, so there goes Bob Cabana from the Kennedy Space Center, eh? Well, that would be a little Canadian, but oh well, it's close.
Okay. Jim, we have a great future. Human spaceflight is alive and well. Our space program is alive and well, and Kennedy is going to continue. Our next 50 years are going to be better than our first 50, I promise you.
Kennedy Space Center remains open for business.
Amen.
So that's the word, Bob Cabana. Thank you very much. Next Sunday, by the way, on Space Talk, my guest will be Paul Damphouse, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel who has extensive experience in military spaceflight, but more importantly is now the Executive Director of the National Space Society. That is all for now. Space Talk is a production of Mylas Solutions and is brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the Ops Station for today's program. Please join us next Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another live hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMMB presents a weekend edition of The Best of Bill Mick Live. I'm Jim Becky, and we will talk to you again real soon.